On today's episode of I Don't Know What the Fuck I'm Doing podcast, David and I are going to be interviewing Michelle Seeler Tucker. She is the founder and CEO of Seeler Tucker Incorporated. This episode is going to be really cool, so stay tuned for this because she's going to tell stories about her failures, successes, and what other businesses can do to prevent failures and closing businesses unexpectedly. Michelle is a 20-year veteran in the mergers and acquisitions industry. She's regarded as a leading authority on buying, selling, fixing, and growing businesses. She and her firm have sold over 1,000 businesses in almost every vertical and have a remarkable track record of success. She has spoken alongside many prominent speakers, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, Kathy Ireland, Donna Karan, Stedman Graham, Randy Zuckerberg, Steve Wozniak, and more. She's a best-selling author of the book, Sell Your Business for More Than It's Worth, and has a new book coming out called Exit Rich. So stay tuned, guys, because at the end of this episode, you're going to hear so much from Michelle, and she's going to be gifting you something absolutely freaking fantastic with her new book coming out, Exit Rich. So let's move along to the episode with Michelle Seeler Tucker.
Welcome everyone, to another episode of the IDK WTF podcast. We have an exciting guest here with us today. So I'm David B. with Anastasia Button, and
we're here with Michelle Seeler Tucker. Woo-hoo! I was introduced to Michelle here from another mutual friend of ours, actually, that has actually been on this podcast, from Jeremy Knopf. I asked him, I said, hey, we need to get some extra powerful women CEOs on this podcast so we can have a little bit more representation. And he said, Michelle, she's your gal. You got to talk to her. So I looked her up and I was like, this is the person we need to talk to. So thank you so much for being on the show here today, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
For those of our listeners who haven't been introduced to you yet, do you want to give a little bit of story? We're going to, they've heard your business bio already, but do you want to kind of talk about kind of where you started and how you ended up to where you are today?
Sure. I'm just going to give you like a quick synopsis because I'd rather spend my time giving real content than talk about me.
Yeah, perfect.
But I've always been an entrepreneur, so I've owned many different businesses along the way. I did kind of get stuck in corporate America, working for a Fortune 500 company, which is Xerox. They actually recruited me. And within 6 months, my nickname became the closer, because every time somebody couldn't close a deal, they're like, call Michelle, she can get it done. She can close it. And then my manager came to me and said, hey, there's a position open for the regional vice president position. And she said, it's a lot more money, great benefits, overseeing about 100 salespeople. And she says, you really should interview for it. It's a grueling process. It's going to be about a 3-month process. She goes, you won't get it because you've only been here for 6 months and you're up against people who have been here for years. And that's Xerox policy. You have to be here for 2 years before they promote you from within. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, if I'm not going to get it, why would I ever waste my time? And she goes, because you'll learn so much from this experience. And I said, okay. So I did it. It's a 3-month bullying process with all the high-level Xerox executives doing Q&As and demonstrations and presentations. And anyway, I did get it. So I guess I really am the closer.
Nice.
So I beat all my friends. And then, you know, of course, they won't talk to me anymore after that. So I became the regional vice president for Xerox and immediately moved out of sales, immediately moved into corporate management, immediately realized I don't like it. And I didn't like it because you're not doing anything. You're not solving problems, you know? Mm-hmm. You're really having meetings to have more meetings to have more meetings, and you can't really make decisions without everybody voting on it. And, you know, so much red tape. And mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, I don't like this. And I'm going to tell you, most business owners should never promote their number one salesperson, their closer, to management. Yeah. So anyway, I ended up looking for something else. I was just going to do something on the side, but I ended up leaving Xerox and transitioning into franchise sales, franchise development, franchise consulting. Sold hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of franchises. And the buyers kept asking, well, do you have an existing business? You know, I don't want the franchise model. And I kept saying, no, no, no. And I'm like, why am I saying no? I should be saying yes, yes, yes. So I'm like, I'm gonna start an M&A practice. And that's what I did. So I started selling small businesses at first, very quickly started selling businesses $10 million and up. I learned very quickly that what Steve Forbes says is true. 8 out of 10 businesses will not sell. Mm-hmm. 8 out of 10 businesses do not sell. So I said, if I don't fix them, build them, grow them, then I'm going to starve to death. So that's when I really transitioned into buying, selling, fixing, growing businesses. I buy them and I flip them. I partner with business owners and invest my money, my expertise, my core competencies to put them on what I call a build to sell program. And my firm and I've sold over 1,000 businesses. At any given time, I own 5 to 10 businesses that I grow to exit. And in pretty much every vertical, that's what I do.
Wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. One reason I wanted you to share that story, because I really like that, and a lot of my listeners resonate with that as well. What I do is, so you know, is I help people get from being in the retail industry and help get them out of retail. And that's one common thing I see is people will be like the number one salesperson. They'll get promoted to a management position, and they were never trained how to be a good manager, and it's not like their particular skill set. So they're frustrated. The company's frustrated, and their employees get frustrated. The other thing,
I think if I was an entrepreneur, I could have been a great manager, but I didn't like it. So you got to really like it, right? I didn't like it.
Especially those meetings are the worst.
Well, I like management, but I don't like management in corporate America because I like to get things done and make decisions right then and there. Absolutely. I don't want to have to wait and go through all this red tape and bureaucracy, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Especially for a company like Xerox, that would be just big for sure. Yeah. So David, you had a question that you wanted to start off this interview with.
Absolutely. And one thing that we do ask all of our guests that we love to hear their answer to, because what we really are doing is normalizing the journey of where not knowing what we're doing and saying that it's okay because, you know, it's okay to not know because we've never done it before. So what I like to ask our guests is what's kind of one of your stories that would you say maybe was one of your greatest failures or one of the greatest, the biggest obstacles you had to overcome?
I'm sure I've had a lot of them, but one comes to mind. You know, I don't really dwell on failures. I don't really think about failures. So when people ask me that question, you know, I really have to think about that. But there's one situation. This was a small deal. This is my first business sale. I had been selling franchises for years, but my first business sale, it was a small flower shop, and talked to buyer, talked to seller, everything. Everybody was ready to close. Everybody was anxious to close. The landlord was out of town. So we didn't have a lease, you know, transferred a lease assigned. And we can't reach them. They were out of the country. I mean, we could reach them, but we can't really get anything done. And I talked to an attorney, and the attorney said, "That's okay. You don't need that. We can go ahead and close." I go, "We can close without a lease?" It's like, "Yeah, we use this transition agreement or whatever it's called." He goes, "We're good." I said, "Are you sure?" And he says, "Yeah, because that was counterintuitive to everything I knew." Because remember, I've been doing leases for franchising, so I had a lot of experience in real estate. And now he goes, "No, we can still close." I'll go, "Okay." So we go to the closing. We go through all the closing docs, and ready to hand over the check. And they're like, "Where's the lease?" And I said, "Well, the landlord's out of the country. The attorney said we can close without one." And then the attorney turned around and said, "I never said that."
Oh, no.
The attorney said, "You can't close without a lease. You have to have a lease." I'm like, "That's not what you said." Yeah. You know, so the attorney completely threw me under the bus. And so then the buyer was mad at me. The seller was mad at me. And I'm like, "What a, you know what?" I'm not going to curse, even though it's the WTF show. Well, that's what I said. WTF. What, Dad?
How did it ultimately end up? Yeah.
Well, we ended up closing it. I mean, it was a mess. And I was very upset with the attorney because, you know, look, one thing I always, you know, pride myself on is that I do a good job. I cross the T's. I dot the I's. You know, I don't leave any surprises. I'm very, you know, do all my due diligence and very diligent in getting deals done. And everybody who knows me will tell you that, will testify to that fact. And for him to like throw me under the bus, I was just livid. But we ended up getting it closed. We ended up getting it done. And now I just don't, you know what? Now when an attorney tells me something, I make sure I Google it or I call another attorney.
Yeah, that trust but verify. Google it.
Yep, trust but verify, inspect what you expect, you know. But I thought that he was telling me the right thing.
Man.
But I could trust the attorney. That's what I've learned not to do. Don't trust the attorney.
Sound advice. Yeah. that's really cool that you were able to kind of save that deal and it didn't just completely fall through. That's really great and testament to your hard work and really wanting to make things right. That's great to hear. Thank you for sharing that story.
Of course.
Yeah. So I have a question when it comes to a lot of what you do on a regular basis, even today, like you have your book coming out called Exit Rich and you have a few others under your belt, which really discuss, you know, selling and fixing businesses. But I'm really curious, what is the number one thing that you really find in businesses all around that they're just kind of not really paying attention to, but need to in order to, you know, sell, franchise or whatever it may be?
Well, there's two big things that they're not paying attention to. One is, and this is why, you know, what Steve Forbes says is true, 80% of businesses don't sell. They're not paying attention to planning their end game, to planning their exit. They never think about selling until a catastrophic event has occurred, whether that's internal or external, internal being health issues, partner disputes, death, divorce, you know, external being COVID. So that's the worst time to sell your business. When you're in the middle of a catastrophic event, your business is going down, you're not paying attention to it, that's the worst time to sell your business. So I really get all my clients to follow what I call the STGPS exit model, which I also illustrate in the book. It's a step-by-step blueprint to help you plan the beginning from the day you start. And then really plan your end game, because most business owners don't build an asset that buyers want to buy. Mm-hmm. A lot of business owners have built themselves a glorified job and wish they go to work for every day versus a business that actually works for them. When they're ready to sell it, they haven't built a solid infrastructure and they're not running on what I call all six cylinders, all six P's. We talk about the six P's too in Exit Rich. Mm-hmm. And so the buyers look at the business. And let me tell you something. It's a competitive market. There's 30.2 million businesses in the United States. At any given time, 40% are up for sale.
Huh.
So if you're going to build your business to sell, if you want to sell your business, it's very competitive. You better have a good business. And you better have a business built with the infrastructure in mind so that you can get top dollar.
Yeah. And, you know, this is really interesting because I have done plenty of work in the startup world, especially here in Denver. And, I'm, you know, the angel investors, they get together and they do their talking. And the number one subject they talked about is that not enough startups even have exit strategies. But you're saying even those who maybe want to work in a business for 20, 30 years, and they still need to have an exit strategy because I think, you know, COVID has really obviously shown that. So it's really interesting that it's not just for startups, it's for even established businesses. That was one of my big takeaways.
It's not startups that are so much selling, it's established businesses that are selling.
Right.
So the established businesses must have an exit strategy, because here's the other statistic you probably don't know. When I wrote my first book in 2013 called Sell Your Business for More Than It's Worth, I did the research and learned that 95% of all startups will go out of business, right? So those first 1 to 5 years is the most at risk. However, when I wrote Exit Rich in 2019, 2020, I did the exact same research and learned that the business landscape has flip-flopped. So now only 30% of startups will go out of business. Only 30%. This is a great time for startups. However, listen to this startup statistic. Out of 27.6 million companies, those businesses that have been in business for 10 years or longer, 70% will go out of business. You see how it's flip-flopped, right? It used to be, oh my gosh, if you've been in business 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, you're golden. You're going to be in business for a very long time, for decades to come. No, that's not true. You hear about the big public companies all the time. Toys R Us in business 75 years, out of business. Kmart, Primark, Pier 1, Godiva Chocolate, our favorite chocolate, closing down 1,500 locations. GNC closing down 900 locations. But you never hear about the private companies on every street corner, in every town, in every state across the great nation. These businesses are dropping like flies. They're exiting poor instead of exiting rich. Mm. They're selling for pennies on the dollar, closing their doors, or even worse, filing bankruptcy. Mm. And so these business owners don't just have an exit plan. They haven't built their business to be sustainable and scalable, operating on what we call the six P's. So it's really, and this is before COVID, by the way. Mm-hmm. Now it's like a business closes down every 10 seconds or something.
It's been crazy. Yeah.
Wow. So these statistics were way before COVID. So small business was in trouble. Small business is the backbone of our economy, employing over half the U.S. workforce. If we lose small business, we'll lose jobs. You lose jobs, you lose spending power, then you lose more small businesses. So this was a problem way before the pandemic. And that's what Exit Rich talks about. It talks about how to plan your exit from the beginning. If you haven't done it, it's not too late. You should go do it right now and really follow that blueprint and then look at the six P's and build your business to operate on that structure.
And I want to reiterate that because I think that's such a huge statistic. And I hadn't heard that until I was listening to a couple of your other interviews before. So now it's 7 out of 10 companies are making it, like startups are making it past that first year up to 5 years. And then it's those businesses that we think are established. They're 10 years old.
Yeah.
They're the ones who have a 70% fail rate.
Correct. Businesses 10 years and older. So that could be a business, business 15 years, 20 years. And the number one reason for that is because they stopped doing what I call AIM, A-I-M, AIM, always innovate and market.
Absolutely.
They stopped innovating. They stopped marketing. They're married to the old concepts. I mean, look at Toys R Us. They did nothing different in 75 years. And then I wonder why they went out of business. I mean, Blockbuster. They saw Netflix had an opportunity to buy Netflix, and they did nothing. They sat back, got unhappy, and did nothing. So the name of the game is innovation. You got to innovate. You got to market. Whoever makes it easiest for the consumer to do business with them is a company that's winning. Amazon is winning right now because Amazon makes it so easy for you to purchase products from them and have it. I mean, you can practically buy a horse on Amazon and have it delivered to your house.
Yeah, that's within a good example because I was actually adamantly against Amazon for so long. I was a hardcore eBay fan. I bought everything on eBay. And then suddenly I was using Amazon all the time. I don't even know how it happened. I just now just shop primarily on Amazon and I know
they find you, they track you. They make it so easy. They have the wand, they have Alexa, they have, you know, everything. And so that's why it's so important for business owners to really, it's also a mindset thing. You know, your business is not your baby. You got kids at home, they're your baby. Your business is your asset, your most valuable asset. You got to build it like a valuable asset so you can continue to innovate, continue to market, and build that sustainable, scalable business. So when you're ready, it's sellable.
One question I have is because a lot of our audience is, we have a wide range. We have a lot of new entrepreneurs just kind of starting up, and we have some people who are ready to scale up. But for those who are newer and they're trying to figure out even how to become profitable, how are they going to get their customer? They don't know anything about CRMs or databases. And just the day-to-day work of setting up a company is so complicated and they don't know if they're going to be successful. What are some tips you have for them to go to that next level and say, establish it in something that can be sellable later? Not only do you not know if you're going to be able to make a profit, but we want to create something that you can sell. How can you conceptualize that for them and make it seem like?
So you mean how do they plan their exit or how do they build their business to be sustainable and scalable?
How do you give them permission to realize that they can plan their exit, that their company will be successful, even more successful than just trying to flounder through with the day-to-day operations?
Yeah. What do you mean? How do you give them permission? I'm trying to understand the question. I'm sorry.
They already feel overwhelmed because just the act of starting a business is a lot of work. How do you add that next level of like, because you have to know your business will be successful to know that you can sell it.
Yeah. So here's how I do it. They are overwhelmed, but it doesn't take long to do this. it takes longer not to do this. So I got two things that I want to go over with you. Number one is the exit model. So whether you're starting a business or buying a business or you've owned a business for 20 years, you got to plan your exit, right? People don't plan to fail. They fail to plan. And so let's talk about the STGPS exit model that I talk about in my book. And this can be done, David, literally in 5 minutes. This doesn't take long. I mean, it's not going to take us 5 minutes, but a business owner, an entrepreneur can do it in 5 minutes. Literally, number one, figure out where you want to go. You know, when you want to drive somewhere, you pull out your phone, you go to Google Maps, and what's the first thing you plug in? Your
destination. Yeah.
Do you know where you got to know where you're driving to? Because if you don't know where you're driving to, you're going to drive around in circles. That's what business owners do. They never have a destination in mind. So they're driving around in circles. They're driving up and down those financial hills. They end up exiting poor, to end up broke, to end up in bankruptcy court. So you got to have your destination. And I always tell my clients, this is easy. This is simple. Pick a number. I don't care what the number is. Pick a number. Y'all pick a number. What do you want to exit for? Pick a number.
Give me a number.
Right now. 5 million. Let's go. Yeah, let's go. What do you want?
5 million. Okay. There's an easy number. That's an easy number. I can get you to $5 million so quickly. So $5 million, what you want to exit. That's your destination. Now the GPS needs to know where you're starting from. What's your location? What's your evaluation? What are you worth today? Mm-hmm. Maybe you'd be surprised, David. Maybe you wouldn't be surprised, but most business owners never have a business evaluation. We go to the doctor once a year to make sure our heart's still ticking and we're still kicking. We drive a car to the mechanic to make sure it's okay. But we never get an annual business valuation checkup. That is financial suicide because there are events to increase valuations or events to decrease valuation. Mm-hmm. So you have to know what your business is worth. So you want to sell for $5 million. What are you worth today? Let's say you're worth, what, $1 million?
Sure.
Or half a million. Pick a number. This is your plan, not mine.
Let's say they are worth $5,000 because they're just kind of starting up. And they're,
So they want to sell for $5 million. They're worth $5,000 today. $5,000 a day. What's the time frame? 10 years?
10 years.
10 years. Okay. So now you need to know who's a buyer going to be. Buyers. Who are the buyers going to be? Not buyer. Because I can promise you, one buyer will not come to fruition. That buyer, the deal will fall apart and you have no backup buyers. Plus, you never can get the highest possible price unless you create competition. You can't create competition with one buyer. So there's five types of buyers. So you need to know, well, who's my buyer is going to be for my $5 million company? It's not going to be a first-time buyer because they buy small businesses. They can't afford $5 million companies. It's not going to be a turnaround specialist because they buy distressed assets. So it's going to be maybe a private equity group, a strategic slash competitor who buys synergies. So they pay the highest multiple typically, or a serial entrepreneur that's industry agnostic and they chase cash flow. Those are your five types of buyers. Then you need to know, well, for me to sell at $5 million, what does the financials need to be? Where's the gross where's the gross revenue is going to be? Where's the gross profit margin need to be? Most importantly, where does the EBITDA need to end up? Mm-hmm. EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Mm-hmm. Adjusted EBITDA. So to sell for $5 million, you need to have an EBITDA of around $1 million. Mm-hmm. Okay? Depending upon your synergies. So then you need to ask, well, what characteristics are these buyers looking for? You know, what synergies will they pay more money for? And then build your business to meet their specific criteria and get your gross revenues and your EBITDA to where it needs to be. And then the last step in the exit model is know your why. You have to have, everything's about the why, right? Why do you do what you do? Mm-hmm. So to sell them $5 million company, if it was easy, wouldn't everybody be doing it? So you gotta have a powerful why. You gotta have a strong enough why. It's gotta keep you in the game. It's gotta keep you motivated. It's gotta keep you weathering the financial storms. So that's the GPS exit. So you see how you can kind. It's a goal, right? It's a goal. Mm-hmm. Maybe they surpass it. Maybe they sell for $3 million and not $5 million. But it's a plan. The problem is most business owners have no plan. Then you want to go into the infrastructure and say, okay, if I want to sell my business for $5 million, then I need to build my business on what I call the 6 P's. And number one, the biggest mistake that entrepreneurs make, other than not planning their exit, is that they are their business.
Yeah.
They are the business. And they really don't have a job. They don't really have a business. They have a job. So entrepreneurs have to stop trying to do it all. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurs have to focus on their strengths, hire their weaknesses. They have to put the right people in the right seats. The first P is people. And they have to ask the who question. Who opens doors? Who deals with customers? Who deals with legal, accounting, marketing, logistics, manufacturing, transportation, environmental? The clue here is that you should never be next to the who. So this takes time. If an entrepreneur is just now starting a business and it's just them, they might say, well, gosh, I can't afford to hire somebody. Well, you also can't afford not to. And you might not be able to afford W-2s, but you can probably get 1099s. Mm-hmm. And you could probably go to your college. I mean, I'm in the middle of four colleges. We have a waiting list for internships. Hmm. So there's always a way that you can get people. You don't build a business. You build people, and people build the business. Mm-hmm. You're not ever going to build a business with just you or just you and a couple of people. So if you want a sustainable, scalable business, you have to figure out the people. Got to get the right people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
And then number two is product. So you got to ask yourself, is my industry on the way up or on the way out? Do I have an Amazon or do I have a Blockbuster? And one of the reasons that most businesses go out is because they stop innovating. Remember AIM? They stopped innovating. So the business, the industry is not in demand anymore. That's what's happening with retail. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening with Godiva. That's what happened with Toys R Us. Because people are buying differently and the business, the owners have not innovated. So in product, if you're in a dying industry, that doesn't mean you pack up and go home and crawl under your bed into a fetal position. That means you got to align yourself with an expert, somebody who can see what you're not seeing, mm-hmm. and really ask these three transformational questions. Amazon did this back in the 90s. Amazon asked themselves, what business are we in? And I said, we sell books. Then they asked themselves, what do we do really well better than anybody else? And I said, we do fulfillment better than anybody else. And then the third question, the most important question is, what business should we be in? What business should we be in? And I'm like, oh, duh, we should be in a fulfillment business. And we should sell everybody's products. Those three questions really is what transformed Amazon to the multi-billion dollar worldwide conglomerate that they are today. So you really got to, you know, business owners have to stop being so transactional. Because when you're in the middle of the chaos, you know, it's chaotic and they're doing all these different things at once. You're never going to grow your company like that. You got to work on your business, not in your business. You got to go from transactional to transformational.
I love that.
That was a lot of mic drops in a very short amount of time. That was great. Wow. So I really kind of want to focus a little bit on the AIM. Innovation specifically, because I think that's a big area for entrepreneurs and business owners that have a lot of fear around it. Because it's like, oh, if I innovate, am I going to fuck this up or am I going to make it better? So in your eyes, you say you, and what you said was to get somebody outside to really come and look inside and see how you can make things better. You know, how would
look, you don't fix what's not broken. Mm-hmm. Don't fix what's not broken. But one of the reasons that so many businesses are in trouble is because they're not diversified. They got all their eggs in one money basket. Mm-hmm. Restaurant, all their eggs in that one restaurant, you know? And they have no working capital. They might have 1 month, 2 months, maybe 3 months max of working capital. You can't do that. So you're going to F up your business if you don't innovate. Right. So you really need to innovate. Don't fix what's not broken, but do what I just said. Ask those three questions. What business are you in? What do you do really, really well? What business should you be in? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people are not, you know, they're not seeing the forest through the trees. So you might do something really, really, really good like Amazon did, which was fulfillment, but they were only selling books. So they can take that huge skill that they have and parlay that into fulfillment and sell hundreds of thousands of products, right? Mm-hmm. And ship them out. And that's what they do. They ship them out. They're just a fulfillment company. That's all they really are.
I imagine also that third question, what business should I be in, isn't an easy one to answer on your own. Getting mm-hmm. some outside advice and some outside consulting is probably...
Because when you're in your fog, right? It's foggy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to see. Look, I partnered with a company that called me and they said, Michelle, I just don't have the business acumen to grow this company to the next level. It was a husband, wife, and one employee. It's a graphics company specialized in graphics for first responders. And he said, I just don't have the business acumen. And he said, it's me and my wife, and we're working like 14 to 16 hours a day. We got one employee, said, right at each other's throats. You know, we're talking divorce. We take a loan out against our family home, you know. And he says, I just don't have the business acumen. He said, but we're very well known. Everybody loves us. Everybody wants our product. In fact, we're turning on 6,000 clients a year. So they have the opposite problem of most clients. So I'm like, listen, we're not going to sell you. He goes, what do you mean you're not going to sell me? I said, well, number one, you're not sellable. I pull you out of the business. There is no business. He had no people. He had no processes. We haven't even got to the third P yet. The third P is processes. He had no people. He had no processes. You pull him out of the business. There is no business. So he said, well, what are we going to do? I said, well, I'm going to do my due diligence. And if I think it's good, I'll partner with you. And I did. I invested money and took them out of their garage office into a 6,000 square foot building, hired 20, 25 people, hired a COO. And now they have a real business doing millions. This guy that told me he doesn't have the business acumen to grow the company to the next level comes up with the best ideas. Best inventions. This guy's full of ideas. The problem is when you're in the middle of all the chaos, when you're in the middle of a fire, like a firefighter, what are you thinking about? Just putting out this fire and surviving, right? Surviving. Mm-hmm. Same thing with a business owner. An entrepreneur is just thinking about surviving. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking about the business from a transformational standpoint. Mm-hmm. So he's got so much expertise and core competencies and business acumen. So does his wife that, you know, we are building this business to sell for millions. And
that's
so
really cool.
That's the thing. I mean, you got to get out of your fog and you really got to think about the business as an asset. A lot of business owners are so close to it. So you got to get an outsider's perspective, really.
Mm. And I love the fact that you actually partner with some of your clients as well. It's not just consulting. You actually partner with some of the companies. You're like, yeah, let's go. Let's roll with this. Because you hear a lot of consultants just staying in that consulting space. So I just really want to honor and think that's really cool that you also partner with these businesses.
Thank you. I don't really call myself a consultant because I don't like trading time for dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's never been my thing.
Because you work on your business, not in your business.
That's the only way I will partner is, I mean, that's the only way I'll consult is with a partnership. We are starting a mentor program over the next, 3 to 6 months. We're starting a new mentors program to get people into the funnel of, really figuring out what their business is worth and then building them to sell. But for me to be a true consultant, I don't trade time for dollars. I'll take an equity position.
And I think your approach is actually really cool and testament for who you are as well, because I've been in the consulting space with corporates and speaking and all of that. And while that might be very glorified in lots of ways, it doesn't have long-term impact in many ways. And so I really find what you're doing here does have long-term impact, especially with the example you gave us. Scaling up a business from a garage to 6,000 square foot? Is that what you said?
6,000.
Yeah, 6,000 square foot building. Like that's really great and amazing. And I think it's great for audience members also to hear that because then they're like, oh, I can do this. And it is possible, especially if they read Exit Rich, right? So
Just if you read Exit Rich, but if you implement the strategies from Exit Rich, because so many people read and hear, because they go to different events, or they used to go to events, and they don't implement. So, knowledge is power, but implementation is everything.
Mm.
And so your book is available for pre-sale right now. Is that right?
It is available for pre-sale. Yes.
And don't they get some super cool bonuses? If
they do
sign up for it.
You have been listening to me.
I feel like it's relevant at this point.
Yeah, we can give that plug now if you like.
Let's go for it.
So just to give you a little insight on my book. So my book was written obviously by me, 95-98% of it. Sharon Lecter is my co-author who wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad with Robert Kiyosaki. She's also written several books in the Thinking Grow Rich Napoleon Hill Foundation, like Outwitting the Devil, Rich Women, et cetera. She's a powerful woman in her own rights. She is a CPA, financial literacy expert, advisor to many different presidents. I think she's an advisor to President Obama. So her husband is an intellectual property attorney. So she writes the mentor's corner after every chapter. Our book was also endorsed by Steve Forbes, who said this book is a goldmine for every entrepreneur. If you don't want to leave money on the table, you better read Exit Rich. And then Kevin Harrington, the original shark on Shark Tank, also wrote the foreword. And then we have Les Brown, who I love and adore. Have you all heard of Les Brown?
Mm-hmm.
Les Brown, Jack Canfield, Mark Victor Hansen, Brian Tracy, Tom Hopkins. So Exit Rich is really, it's not just about selling a business. So I don't want your listeners to think, well, I'm not selling a business. It's not about that. It's about building something that will be sellable when and if you're ever ready. Because you don't want to get to the time where you have to sell a business. Because let me tell you something, nothing lasts forever. What goes up must come down. You're either growing or dying, right? And businesses have cycles, just like humans have cycles. We're newborn and then death. Mm-hmm. Business is the same way, newborn and death and everything in between. So it's really about building a solid infrastructure and plan your exit from day one, because even if you don't sell it, at least you'll have a much more profitable business. Mm-hmm. And you won't leave your family, in a terrible situation. I just had a sweet little old lady call me not too long ago, and she said, my husband dropped dead from a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And she said, he left me with a mountain of debt. And she goes, honey, I don't know anything about that business. I don't know anything about any finances. And so I started asking questions, but he had a construction business, mm-hmm. no people, mm-hmm. all subcontractors, no people, no processes.
Right.
You know, he had nothing to sell. He left it with a mountain of debt. You know, so I always tell business owners, think about your family. You want to set them up for success, right? Mm-hmm. So Exit Rich, again, it's all about building a sustainable, scalable business. You can get it in pre-sale at exitrichbook.com, $24.79. That includes, you don't have to wait till June. The book comes out in June. We will email you the digital download so you can start reading it now.
Ooh.
We will ship the hardcover to your doorstep. We'll give you a lifetime membership into the Exit Rich Book Club, where we have all kinds of video content about me going into these deep, you know, techniques and strategies and transformational questions and everything, plus documents. So documents to run your business, documents to sell your business. We have sample employee handbooks, sample non-compete, sample org chart, sample letter of intent, sample purchase agreements for your business, sample due diligence checklist, sample closing docs. All of these documents are over $25,000 to $30,000 if you try to recreate them. They're there for not only your review, but you can download them too.
Huh. So that seems like a great deal.
A huge deal. I mean, $24.79 for all of that. Plus, we're giving you 30 days free membership into Club CEOs, which is an entrepreneur mastermind that I started. And this mastermind is geared towards entrepreneurs really asking those transformational questions, helping them pivot, and helping them build that sustainable, scalable business.
I love that you have a community where people can really come and help each other and feel support, because that's a big piece of our podcast as well. It's just, again, having that support of, it's okay, you don't know what you're doing. We can all figure it out together and help you do that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a big thing, because Anastasia, you really don't know what you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. It's not what you know that gets you in trouble. It's what you don't know. And here's the bottom line. Why not learn from others that have been down your path? Why not learn from their mistakes? Don't learn from your own mistakes. Learn from their mistakes, you know? And don't repeat history, because the bottom line is, the more successful entrepreneur is, the more time they have to help other entrepreneurs become successful. Mm-hmm. And their path shortens your path dramatically, shortens your learning curve dramatically.
This has been one of my favorite interviews so far, Michelle. Thank you so much for being on our podcast and just being an awesome role model, not only to entrepreneurs, but to women as well. I really appreciate you being here and really representing for our community.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to get more women in, you know?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Don't Know What the Fuck I'm Doing podcast.
We can't do this without you, and to reward you for your support, we would like to invite you to something unique.
Go to beacons.ai/IDKWTFPOD to schedule a complimentary 15-minute phone call with one of us.
You can also find the link in the description.
We're here to brainstorm with you on different solutions for your business or life.
We want to hear your feedback about our podcast, or even just schedule some time to say hi.
Not only that, but anyone who chats with us will get a voucher for $100 in restaurant coupons.
Schedule some time today, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode.